Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm Alistair Beckett King.
And hey, Alistair.
Hi, James.
You remember we did an episode about Morton in Marsh in the past?
No, but I believe that we probably did.
No, it was our shortest episode yet.
Oh, yes, of course. Our very popular shortest episode.
And people were screaming for more Morton in Marsh.
Clamouring, I believe they were. Clamouring.
They were. Well, you know what? We've bowed to that public pressure.
Finally. Yeah. Give the fans what they want, James.
Well, here you have it. It's more Morton in Marsh. Alistair Beckett King.
Hello, James Shakeshaft.
Hello. I've got a sequel of sorts.
Yeah?
Or it's just more. It's more Morton in Marsh.
More Morton in Marsh.
More. Morton in Marsh. Morton in Marsh.
Great grandmother in Swedish. Morton in Marsh.
Is in a marsh.
Just grandmother. I don't know. We talked about the fact that the word for great grandmother in Swedish is more.
More.
We talked about that before 4-4, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It is more Morton in Marsh, James.
More Morton in Marsh.
Every day we get emails saying, when are you doing a sequel to that Morton in Marsh episode that I remember so well, indelibly seared into my mind?
It was the Dame Kresick's Spectre episode.
Okay, that is ringing a distant bell, like the tinkling of a fairyland.
Which came in as, I think, the shortest episode ever.
The shortest episode we've ever done.
It was like 20 minutes.
Wow.
And yet, there's more.
And that one's getting a sequel.
That's getting a sequel.
Maybe this should just have gone in that episode. Bulk it out a bit.
There is a bit that should have gone in that episode that I'd forgotten. So that all centred around...
Are you going to do a wiki record scratch previously on the Lawmen's recap of who the flip Dame Kresick is?
Previously on Lawmen, who the flip Dame Kresick is.
Thank you.
You could probably listen to the episode. It is only 20-odd minutes long.
Yep.
So in Morton in Marsh, there was Kresick House, and Dame Kresick was allegedly moidered there in one of two ways.
This dame's been moidered.
Did we do that? We already did that joke in the 20-minute long episode?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Apologies for any jokes that we do repeat.
Not just in this episode, but across the entire podcast.
Oh, well, I wouldn't go so far as that. I think I'll apologise on a case-by-case basis, please.
Okay.
Sometimes they're really good.
Eventually it becomes a callback if you just keep doing the same joke over and over again.
Exactly. Kresick House, it became the Manor House Hotel, and I've actually stayed at that hotel.
Since the recording?
No, before the recording.
Before
I'd
the
forgotten.
But it made such an impression on you that you saved it for the sequel.
Really could have bulked that episode runtime up to 21 and a half minutes.
Yeah, well, tell me, James. Tell me the story of the Manor House Hotel.
Oh, I just stayed there. And
that's the whole story,
went to a wedding.
I can't believe this didn't make the final cut of episode one.
Went to a wedding and an elderly relative started talking to me about marijuana.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was fun.
The old amusing cigarettes.
Yeah.
As I call them.
The kooky tabooky. That's not how you say tobacco. That's not how anyone says tobacco.
No, kooky tabooky. Yeah, that's what we call it around here.
Kooky kabooky. It's a Japanese form of satirical theatre. But no, there's loads more about Morton, Alistair, actually. For a start, and I definitely told this story before, but not in that episode, it's the town that I had to walk back from in the dark because I cheeked a taxi driver.
Oh, yes.
That time.
Yes. The famous James taxi driver cheeking incident.
Yes, because there's a town nearby called Broadway. Just a quick recap, the taxi driver said...
Yeah, let's just do that anecdote once more. Is this a clip episode? Is this like a best of episode?
It's a recreation episode. This is a Crime Watch episode.
And the crime was you cheeking a taxi driver.
Yeah, because he said he was in Broadway, which is the name of a town, and I said, I don't want to hear about your theatrical dreams, or something to that effect. And then he didn't come and pick me up, and I had to walk back in the pitch black dark.
What? Ironically, quite a diva, really.
Yes, very good point. But Alistair, I want to talk to you about the infamous Moreton Fire College, previously the Flight Training School, previously an aerodrome in World War II, previously a bit of a golf course.
What a career path.
Yeah.
Golf course, aerodrome, flight training, fire. Was there an accident with the planes and they just pivoted to fire station?
I don't know if they did it like on the hoof live, yeah. But there were a number of tragedies on the premises. But does premises include fields?
Yeah.
Can premises be outside? Or are they by their nature inside?
No, I think premises can be outside, definitely.
Thank goodness.
But I tell you what they don't include, the sky.
Oh, really?
So if anything spooky happens in a plane, that's not on the premises.
Ah, okay. Well, something spooky happens involving a plane on the premises. We'll get to that. But I think you're putting two and two together already.
Mm.
Also, we're going to have a bunch of stuff happening off the premises, but potentially linked to the premises at the end. These riddles will make sense by the end of the episode.
Good, which should be in about 10 minutes.
Yes. Don't worry. We're nearly there.
Are we talking about UFOs, James?
We might get onto that.
Ooh, nice.
Ooh.
Oh. Do you remember when people started trying to say UFOs for a bit?
Have some people persisted with that?
I think it's like GIF. I think there's a few people out there who are hardcore UFOers, and it's like, it's not a word. It's not going to become a word. It's UFOs. Although that is how Germans pronounce Yoo-hoo glue, isn't it? It's Uhu.
And Wi-Fi's Wi-Fi.
What?
Oh, big time.
Whoa.
You want a Wi-Fi password in password? You want the Wi-Fi password in Germany? It's the Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fi.
And I don't know what the German word for password is.
I bet the German word for password is great. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah, we're all going to have to.
Passwort.
Is
come
it?
On, Germany. Make an effort.
Oh, come on. Oh. Oh, I've fact-checked myself mid-episode, and I've come out wanting. Wi-Fi password, according to Google, is WLAN Passwort. They call Wi-Fi WLAN.
WLAN?
W-L-A-N is what they're saying.
WLAN.
Because, I guess, is Wi-Fi a brand name or something? If anything, it means wireless fidelity, which doesn't make any sense. I think it is a brand name, like Bluetooth.
Yeah, or Eurovision.
Eurovision. Let's not get onto that again.
Yeah. I was furious when I found out about that.
Yeah.
On this podcast in a previous episode.
Yeah, you can look at, I can't remember what episode we didn't complain about the concept of Eurovision being made up by a satellite company to sell satellite companies.
I like the way we've moved the podcast on from two aging guys remembering things to two aging guys remembering things about the podcast in which they remember things.
And complaining about Eurovision. The company, not the song contest. I don't mind the singing. Right. So, Alistair, let me soothe that angry beast, which is your opinions about Eurovision, by taking you back to 1917, which is...
way before Eurovision.
It's almost 40 years before Eurovision. Mm. It's around 40 years before Eurovision. It's just under 40 years before Eurovision. I'm not sure exactly when Eurovision started, so I've given myself some options there. So, in 1917, the fire college was not a fire college. It was a golf course that was not on fire. It was only a 9-hole golf course, which is half the amount of holes a normal golf course has for any golf novices.
Yes, that's odd.
And there was a path that ran across the course, which went from Tottenham Road to Leamington Grange. And the person who reports this story was a child at the time, and his father was in charge of the upkeep of the greens. The boy would often find his father on the path, which was bordered by thorny hedgerows. And the father would be like digging out golf balls that had got lost in the spiky bushes.
Yeah, not from his body parts.
Yes.
Not pulling them out of ears and wedged in his gut. But from the thorny bushes.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't play golf, but it's not just posh people whacking golf balls at employees, is it? They try not to hit the people.
No, they do shout four.
And then they throw four balls at you.
Or an abbreviation of I'm aiming for you. The kid was 12 and he was walking along the path and he saw something he was to remember for the rest of his life. I'm taking this, as ever, from Folklore and Mysteries of the Cotswolds by Mark Turner. I think he lived in Morton in March for a bit because it's by far the longest section of the book. So at that point on the path, where the boy expected to see his father, he saw a grey, ashen-faced phantom hovering through the hedge.
Through it?
Moving towards him. Its eyes were closed as though in death. Whilst it was moving through the hedge, it wasn't disturbing any leaves. It was passing through like a sort of mist. A scary mist. And the boy was so terrified, he ran away. And he later came to regard the phantom's appearance as a premonition of his father's death in the war in France a year later.
Oh, dear.
So, there we have it. A little boy seeing a ghost of his dad who's alive at the time.
Yeah.
A future ghost.
Future ghost. Future ghost.
What you got to tell me, future ghost? Well, sad news. And then, during World War II, this became an aerodrome. It was the 21st Operational Training Unit, which was used for the training of Wellington bomber crews, which...
threw wellies at people.
Now, for people who remember the previous episode, that makes sense as to why there's a Wellington Aircraft Museum that, if you remember correctly, was only open for 4 hours on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah. By previous episode, you mean the previous Morton and Marsh episode?
Yes.
From ages ago.
So the first story comes from a woman who lived in Morton during the war years and worked for a local jeweller.
This is jeweller, not dueller, right?
Yes. Yes, okay. Very good point. That's a really good point. That is a mistake you do not want to be making.
No.
This spectre, this apparition, happened down by the aerodrome where it ran next to the London Road. And this fella was passing on his motorcycle when a ghostly white shape began following him from outside the aerodrome. He accelerated on his motorbike to leave it behind and was relieved to find it did not follow him into the town centre. Now, ooh. Alistair.
Yeah?
A ghostly white shape, a grey ghost.
Yeah.
Around the same part of the world. What is grey? But a pessimist's white.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
You're drawing a parallel. You think there's a connection between those two apparitions?
Could be the same thing. But they do go on to point out that that area of ground used to be quite boggy, hence the name Morton in Marsh. That's kind of the boggy bit, and that's where you sort of find marsh gases.
Like, we're talking about will-o'-the-wisps.
Yeah. And now we come to the first of the tragic tales from this area. During World War II, whilst this was an aerodrome, well, a cheeky young pilot took one of the WAAFs.
What?
Out for a joyride.
No, you crazy flyboys.
Those WAAFs, that is the Women's Auxiliary Air Force. I don't know how it was pronounced, though. Was it pronounced WAAF?
I think it was pronounced WAAF.
WAAF!
Yeah. With a sort of Reese Shearsmith inflection, I think.
Yeah. Now, this is a bad intro for a sad story.
Yes, if I feel like we've veered away from the impending tragedy.
Yes, because they crashed into the trolley ack room. And they both died.
Well, that's really sad. But sorry, what room?
The trolley ack room.
Trolley ack?
Yeah, it was the room where they kept all the trolley acks.
What's a trolley ack?
Well, I Googled that. It's a trolley accumulator.
A trolley accumulator?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I still don't really know what it is.
Well, it is quite neat. Because it's like a battery on wheels. In order to start the plane's motor, you need electrics.
Yes, of course.
But it's quite inefficient to keep a big, heavy battery on an aeroplane if you're only using it to start. So why not keep that on the ground, on a set of wheels, wheel it over to the aeroplane, boom, jump start it, wheel it over to the next aeroplane, boom, so on. So that was a trolley ack. And they were kept in a room.
I'm no expert, but I would have thought crashing into a room full of them would be less than ideal.
Oh, it's really bad. They rebuilt the room and continued to use it as a storage bit for trolley hacks. And that room was haunted. They would malfunction quite regularly, these trolley hacks. And sometimes people said they saw the ghost of a woman.
Very sad.
It's probably not true.
Oh, great.
So, you know.
Good.
You know, take it with a pinch of salt.
Oh, I feel much better about that, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm feeling fine now.
Yes. And then after the war, this became a flight training school, but still the equipment malfunctions continued and the ghost of the WAF was still seen.
Yeah.
Then, in 1959, it evolved into its final form. Yeah. A fire college. And in the 80s, there was a ghost, which sounds really annoying.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the 80s either.
So this ghost haunted the E block, a residential area for the college staff. Because it's basically, it's quite a cool training college. It's a really big area, obviously. It's in a former aerodrome near a golf course. And they've got like bit of motorway where they do training for doing fires on bits of motorway. There's a bit of an aeroplane.
Mm.
There's a concrete ship set in a dock, a multi-story building, a bit of railway, and various other complex training aids.
It's like Disneyland for fires.
Yes.
For places where serious fires can occur.
Exactly that, yes.
Wow, it's like Diggerland.
Sort of Diggerland. And there's a swimming pool there, which I think is just used for fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a particularly dangerous. I would say that's the least dangerous part of the fire training area.
Well, you say that.
What?
We'll get to that.
Okay. This place is just, whew.
So the residential area was haunted by a mischievous ghost of a man who died in the 80s. And what the ghost would do is, when the cleaners went through, the ghost would open all the windows behind them. Windows have been found open several times on occasions when no one could have been in the room after the cleaning staff. And the window opening activities were put down to the ghost of the former resident, who, when living in the building, would follow the cleaners around the block, opening the windows to let fresh air into the rooms.
Oh, so he was annoying in life as well as in death.
Yep.
Just get some interests of your own. Don't just follow cleaners around undoing their good work.
Just being annoying.
They just cleaned that floor. You tramping around in it, opening windows. Come on. Chill out. Enjoy a dip in the pool.
Now, Alistair, do you know what you were doing at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 17th of May, 1990?
I do not know, no.
I would guess I was probably watching The Fresh Prince or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If Fresh Prince was on, I would have been watching that.
6:30, was that 6 o'clock?
I think 6:30 was, The Simpsons was on at 6, wasn't it?
Not in 90.
No?
Nah. Nah, I don't think Simpsons had made it to terrestrial by then.
No, you're right. Misremembering which house I lived in 1990.
Tuesdays would have been TNG, BBC Two, 6 till 6:45. But Thursdays, we're too early for Party of Five? Probably.
I never watched Party of Five. I'm slightly younger than you, James. Very slightly.
Well, at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 17th of May, 1990, one of the members of the college cleaning staff saw a ghost.
Sorry, were you asking me for an alibi there? I didn't realise. I was really vague. I didn't realise that I'm now implicated.
Well, actually, you could fit some of the description here.
Oh, yeah?
Now, while this cleaner was working in one of the main blocks and walking along an interior corridor with another member of staff, she suddenly saw walking towards her a young lady with long brown hair, aged about 18 or 19, dressed in clothing typical of the 1960s.
Mm.
So, I mean, could you have been mistaken for an 18 or 19-year-old young lady with long brown hair, dressed in clothing typical of the 1960s?
At the age of six in 1990, no.
No?
No.
You're not wearing flares?
No, it was the late 80s and early 90s. We just wore shell suits, children at that time. Full shell suits.
Full shell suits.
That's the sound of a child moving.
If it wasn't fireworks night, we'd be wearing shell suits.
Yeah.
The young lady said nothing but smiled pleasantly and simply passed by. She was not seen by the second member of staff, who was looking the other way. And as soon as the girl had passed, the witness felt that something was not quite right. Perhaps it was a six-year-old boy. So she turned to look again, and the girl had completely vanished. There was nowhere she could have gone to. She couldn't have gone down this really long corridor. There was heavy swing doors, which would have been still going if she'd have gone through them. And the witness did not recognise the girl and was certain that she'd never seen her before. And they asked around. The presence was unexplained and remains a mystery.
Mm. Seems like a happy ghost, that one.
Yeah, seems pretty chill. Now, Mr. Paul Swallow, the head of security at the fire service, has another story of a ghost. So on one occasion, he was with a fellow security guard and they were checking the buildings last thing at night, secured the admin block, turned off all the lights. Then they looked back and saw the upstairs lights come on. So they go back into...
Bing, 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 bing.
I imagine it was exactly like that, Alistair. That's an excellent sound effect.
Thank you. It's almost as good as my record scratch sound effect.
Is there a donkey in this fire college? So they go back into the building and they hear the sounds of people moving around and hear a door close. They give a thorough check of the building and prove beyond a doubt there's no one present.
Who switched the lights on?
It sounds more like they just missed someone. Who am I to judge? They're security guards. They know their job.
Yeah, James, didn't you learn your lesson with that taxi driver? Stay in your lane.
That's a good point. That's what I was telling the taxi driver. That's another story about a taxi driver that I offended. And then on another occasion, one of the security guards was scared out of their wits by a ghost coughing near them one time.
Ooh.
Now, back in 1987, so we're just skipping back a couple of years, there's an excellent story that happened on the edge of the fire college, flight training school, aerodrome, golf course. So he was parked on the edge of the old aerodrome on what would have been one of the old ends of one of the runways. And it was between 10 p.m. and midnight, and there was moonlight and some thin cloud, and he heard an almost deafening sound of a plane travelling very low towards him. And looking out on the runway, he saw a large plane going right for him. There were no lights on it. It's coming right for me.
Isn't it a bit like North by Northwest?
Yes, but he's in a car, not in a field.
Yeah. Still, and it's good.
This is the account from Folklore and Mystery of the Cotswolds by Mark Turner, which was published in 1993. Now, he also published Mysterious Gloucestershire in 2011.
Which was the original Peter Andre title for that song. And then at the last second, they switched it to Girl.
Mysterious Gloucestershire.
And they're like, it's just something's not working. Peter.
Doesn't scan, Peter.
Is it the way the water makes your legs look short? No, it can't be that.
So... There's no explanation for why the man is there on the edge of the runway. Mysterious Gloucestershire is published, to give it its full title.
Yes. Incredible to write an entire book while waist deep in the waters of the Caribbean. That's just incredible work. Well done, Mark.
He was parked up on the edge of the former aerodrome with a female companion. And they found their quiet time together disturbed by the roar of an aircraft engine, and he saw the large plane coming towards him in the moonlight, and it appeared to be an old-fashioned machine, and it was so low that they dived down in the car, and the plane passed overhead, and then they heard a very loud bang, followed by silence. They got out of the car convinced that they've just witnessed a plane crash.
You've just witnessed a plane crash.
You, sir, have just witnessed a plane crash. You, sir, and female companion have just both witnessed a plane crash. But they got out, looked around. There's no sign of anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sign of an accident. However, suddenly, from a road nearby, came the sound of voices, and they saw a group of cyclists heading towards them. And then they realised those cyclists, they're dressed in odd clothes. They're not in Lycra. They appear to be wearing RAF uniforms and are completely unaware of the man and his companion's presence. The cyclist then proceeded to cycle straight through a fence.
What?
And continue until they were out of sight.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best ghost visions ever described on this podcast.
Nice, because we've had a lot.
Up until now, they've been terrible.
And do you want to know the real tragedy that happened in 1990.
What was it?
The 3rd of December, 1990. Little Jimmy Shakes is turning 10, and he's got his birthday booked in at the Fire College pool.
Yeah?
And they're going to get the big inflatable dog out and everything.
Yeah.
You know the big inflatable dog?
Not really.
It was like a big inflatable dog that you'd have at a pool and you'd spend the whole time just trying to get on that big inflatable dog because it was a bit too big and inflated.
Sliding off, yeah.
Massive.
Yes.
But that Saturday, it snowed really heavily. Roads were too icy. In fact, the Fire College cancelled all bookings for that day.
No!
Yeah. So I had to cancel my birthday party.
Oh.
Having a birthday so near Christmas, you can't rearrange it.
No, you can't rearrange it because it's... Oh, come on.
3 weeks out of Christmas is like the limit.
Yeah.
Which is exactly, pretty much exactly where my birthday lies.
Nothing's going to be available.
So, Moreton Fire College, site of tragedy.
So many tragedies, yes.
So many tragedies.
I can't believe that you forgot all of these personal tragedies.
No.
You're like the character in like in season three of a TV show where it's like, oh, I've got loads more backstory I've never mentioned just to give us some more stuff to do. You're like, you're going, oh, by the way, I nearly went swimming in this haunted location.
What? Yeah.
How did that not come up?
To take the taste of that tragedy away, I've got a bunch of UFOs.
Oh, I forgot about the UFOs.
The 50s and 60s proved a fertile period for reports of flying saucers.
Are you reading or is this how you talk now?
No, this is how I talk now. No, this is from Mysterious Gloucestershire.
Is it? It's weird that I could tell. I've just never heard you say proved a fertile period.
Now, in the early 50s, a woman from Moreton saw something in the sky from her garden in Reedsdale Place. It was a clear evening, and she saw a flying saucer suddenly appear in the sky and hover above a house nearby. It was saucer-shaped, with a dome on the top. Classic flying saucer. It glowed orange, and its edges were lit by a bright yellow light. She said that it was bigger than a house, and it was seen by at least two other people, hovered for a few minutes, rose up and shot off towards Stow-on-the-Wold.
I've got business in Stow-on-the-Wold. I'm an alien. Got to get to Stow-on-the-Wold.
In the 80s, a credible witness, Mark says...
Sorry, that really implies that the previous witness was not credible.
It was less than credible. He was stood on the bridge awaiting a train coming in from Oxford. Dusk had fallen and he saw a strange sphere-shaped orange light hovering in the sky some distance away above the village of Evenlode. And he remained stationary for several minutes before hurtling away across the sky at an incredible speed.
In the direction of...
I don't know. Probably, I don't know. Maybe ships and non-Stower?
It's no Stow-on-the-Wold.
It's no Stow-on-the-Wold. But we've got... Oh, there are some tales there. We'll get to that one day when we've completely exhausted Moreton in Marsh.
One day I'll tell my tales about Stow-on-the-Wold. But not today.
Not today. And now this witness was a former member of RAF aircrew.
Was she a WAF?
This was a man. He was sceptical that any conventional aircraft could have accelerated at such a speed and remains at a loss as to what the light was. And there's one last UFO. In the early years of the 21st century, so we're getting close. We're getting close to nowadays.
Yeah. That's this century.
They saw a light in the sky above Hospital Road. They went out for a cig break and they saw a bright white light suddenly come across the sky and hover above them. It was high in the sky like an aeroplane or a cloud, I guess. Other things could be high in the sky. And it was unaccompanied by sound and it hovered for about 5 minutes. And then when one of the ladies went indoors and put on a light, it shot off at breakneck speed across the sky. Much faster than could have been achieved by an aeroplane or helicopter. The size of the object was difficult to estimate, but it was large and unlike the distant light of a star, planet, or conventional aircraft. So there you go.
They scare easy, these UFOs.
They do, don't
always
they?
Always zipping off to Moreton in Marsh. No, Stow-on-the-Wold, sorry.
Stow-on-the-Wold. So, yeah, I'd got no idea what could explain all those UFOs near the site of a flight training school.
It's a real mystery.
It's a real mystery.
I'll tell you what, it wasn't an inflatable dog. Because they'll dangle an inflatable dog in front of the 10-year-old and then whip it away.
So are you ready to score me then?
Yes, I am.
Go on.
I just really incredible that you managed to mine anything more out of Morton in Marsh. Well done.
Oh, I'm sure there's more Morton in Marsh terror.
As well as some classic Shay Shaft backstory.
Yes. First category.
Mm-hmm.
Naming.
Well, I noticed Reedsdale pop up.
Yes.
And that, of course, is where Parsi Reed of Pillow Slips Parsi Reed lived.
Really?
Yeah, from the Reed family. There was Reedsdale and Liddesdale.
Huh.
So, yeah, I noticed that. So in terms of remembering words we've said on the podcast before.
Excellent.
That counts for something. It's been a very remembery episode.
It has been. It's been mired in the past. But maybe that will be a category later that you never know. What else we got? We got Star in the World.
Yeah.
We got Morton in Marsh. We've got an even load.
The names are colourful, but a little irritating.
Yeah.
They're all a little bit quaint.
Paul Swallow.
Paul Swallow?
Yeah, he was the security guard guy that heard the coffin ghost that turned on the light. Oh, mysterious Gloucestershire.
Oh, yeah, that's good. All right. So that's three names I like so far.
Mm.
Have you got anything more for me?
No, no one else would identify themselves in these tales. You don't even know the name of the nine-hole golf course.
What? Come on. Well, in the absence of a hilariously named credible witness, it's 3 out of 5.
Mm. All right, then. Second category, supernatural.
Well, I'm going to dismiss the UFOs from this category because I think they can be expliqued.
Yes, by either being something to do with the WW2 aerodrome, the flight training school, or the fire college that has the capacity to simulate a fire in a multi-story building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Universal Studios for near-death experience.
Yes, the backdraft experience or the Waterworld one.
Yeah, and I can't help but think that also the other thing that might explain weird lights is I'm afraid to say, marsh gas. Something for which Morton in Marsh is known.
Yeah. All right. All right. So we're discounting those. Fine.
However, whole aeroplane coming overhead.
Yes.
Cyclists going through a fence.
Yes.
That is a just a gold standard, a smiley face stamp on your homework quality ghost sighting.
Yes.
It's really, really good.
Yep.
So I think it's 4 out of 5 just on the strength of that one. I'm not even counting the rest. They're dismissed out of hand.
The other ones, which were probably mist-based ghosts, don't need to be brought up. Brilliant. What about the 60s girl, though?
Oh, I forgot about the 60s girl.
It's 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 17th of May, 1990.
Well, it doesn't become spookier just because it's more specific.
Oh.
The 60s ghost is fine. I mean, did she have a cough? I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
Just one second. I'm doing something. I don't know if it's going to work.
Okay. Go for it.
Google, what was on TV 6:30 p.m. on the 17th of May, 1990?
Have you found it?
I think it might have been the second episode of My Two Dads.
I remember My Two Dads.
One of them was the baddie from Aliens, Paul Reiser, not the Alien Queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, that's not how I remember the film. It's not how I remember My Two Dads, a giant Geiger-esque creature, all wrapping people in stuff.
Yeah, I think it was the second episode of My Two Dads was airing. On UK, in the UK. So still only 4, though.
Yeah, it's still 4. It's still 4, in spite of you claiming that the alien from Aliens was in My Two Dads.
was one of the two dads in My Two Dads.
Yeah, absolutely wasn't.
Third category is, I'm going to go with it, it's mired in the past.
Mire, like a marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of wordplay there.
Mm-hmm.
But this category ain't naming.
But, it was so, we did a little bit of psychogeography there, didn't we?
Is psychogeography when you just vaguely remember things?
Yeah, from a certain place, from a town, from a town or a place.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it sounds really easy to do psychogeography, but okay.
Potentially the same spot, the golf course, the kid is scrumping for golf balls, the grey or white mist that chased the motorcyclist, the plane crash, the lovers.
You're right, it's a rich tapestry.
The little boy crying on his birthday. All these things.
They'll be lost like tears in a swimming pool. It didn't even get to a swimming pool. It was cancelled, listener. James, I'm sorry to inform you that none of those memories are real. They were implanted there.
What?
Yep.
You're going to tell me I didn't used to ride a unicorn around town.
Okay. This has been one of our most nostalgic slash vaguely reminiscence filled episodes.
Mm.
I don't want to imply that it was of low quality or that good effort wasn't put in, or that it isn't worth people continuing to listen to the podcast.
Mm.
I don't want to imply any of those things.
Good.
But it was quite remembersome.
It was very memories.
It was very memories. So it's 5 out of 5.
Yes.
Pew, pew. At least that's how I remember it.
Yes, nicely done.
Mm. I'm trying to do that like in the style of the main character from Rebecca.
What, the queen from Aliens? And the final category, missed a bit. Because basically, at least three of them were mists.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And one of them, well, a number of them annoyed cleaning staff.
That's true. That is annoying.
And the easiest way to annoy someone who's cleaning something is to just say the words, missed a bit.
Yeah. I'm not particularly impressed with this category. I think it itself is a bit of a miss. But does that mean that I have to give you more points for it?
I'm pretty sure it does.
Does it?
Yeah, probably.
All right, I'll knock it up from a 2 to a 3 then. How does that fit you?
Sounds like you missed a couple of points there.
Yeah, I missed a bit, yeah.
Mm.
3 out of 5.
Yeah. I think I might have mentioned before, it's a transition from boy to man is when people, when you're cleaning a car, stop saying to you, oh, you can do mine if you want.
Yeah, to...
You've missed a bit.
Missed a bit. Mm. Why is it culturally acceptable to command children to clean your vehicle? Children aren't butlers.
No. Although they would be cute.
I cut to like 1960s sitcom music underneath a montage of children being butlers. Essentially what we're talking about is child labour, but fun, whimsical.
They got cute little suits.
Bow ties.
They live under the stairs.
Can be summoned with little bell rings.
You wouldn't need as much room for your servants' quarters.
Because they're small.
Because children are smaller. You just have kid-sized beds.
I think this is how the Victorian times got started, James.
Oh, really?
This sort of thinking.
Okay, I'll rein it in. We won't have children butlers.
All right. You've been listening to Lawmen, the foremost remembering things and child labour endorsing podcast on the internet.
There you go, chilling.
Yep. Say what you will, that was more Morton in Marsh.
That was more Morton in Marsh.
It would have been hard to do less.
Yeah. And if the listeners want to listen to even more Morton in Marsh and even more episodes of podcasts.
If the listener wants to hear the sound of a barrel bottom being scraped into their ears.
From Morton in Marsh. If they go to patreon.com/lawmenpod and sign up for Patreon, they get bonus episodes.
Ooh.
Which features all sorts of stuff. Offcuts, bits and bobs, things, and access to the Lawmen.
So it's just amazing your ability to come up with these things without scripting it, James.
Oh, I just riffed that.
What? No way.
Yeah.
It's like a young Mozart composing self-promotion.
We're not endorsing, we're enforcing.
What?
I don't know.
I'm not legally liable for any of the things James says on the podcast, just to be clear.